Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart, and on Mondays, we like to get to some reviews and previews of all the content that's out there, from books to music to podcasts, and this week, we're talking about the big screen. On the agenda, we've got comebacks for two well-known actors, Ang Lee's latest work, and one critic called a smug Hitler comedy, and then there's Mr. Rogers. Joining us now to talk about all of it is Aisha Harris, culture editor for The New York Times. Hi, Aisha.
Hi, how are you?
Sorry, I lost my place there for a minute. Let's start with Pain and Glory, Pedro Almodovar's new film. The New York Times says it features career-best work from Antonio Banderas. What's the film about?
It's one of my favorite films of the year, personally.
Wow.
So Pedro Almodovar is working with Antonio Banderas again. They were frequent collaborators in the 80s. And now that they're working together again, it's actually sort of partly inspired by their working relationship. And Antonio Banderas plays a director who's got a few things going on. He is physically ill. He is in a creative rut, and he's sort of despairing over sort of his career and his life and the choices he's made. And throughout the film, part of the setup is that it's the 30th anniversary of one of the films he directed. And so Antonio Banderas' character is going to be reunited with the star of that movie, who he had a falling out with years before. And so it's like just a really lovely personal film featuring flashbacks to Antonio Banderas' character's childhood, lovely performances, and I think it's one of Almodovar's best in quite a long time.
Do you think it is for a dedicated Almodovar fan, or does it have wider appeal?
Oh, I definitely think it has wider appeal. It touches on a lot of themes that are very universal, especially if you are a film lover. It touches on, you know, creativity, art, long lost love, and missed opportunity, and just this the sense of memory and wanting to sort of relive parts of your life. I think that it's very universal, and people will really enjoy it.
I heard you say film director, so it makes me wonder if it is autobiographical in any way.
Yeah, I definitely think it's touching. Yeah. It's a very personal film for Almodovar, for sure.
Okay, that one is called Pain and Glory. Parasite. I see Parasite everywhere. So I love Bong Joon-ho's film. It deals with greed and class aspiration between two Korean families. You have the wealthy Parks and the Kims, who are destitute, but they're kind of grifters at the same time. And the trailer sort of suggests there were surprises and twists along the way. What did you think of this film?
It is another one of my favorite films of the year. Bong has actually referred to it as a monster movie, and I think that's a very accurate description of the film. It is definitely a film that I suggest people, the less you know about it going into it, the better. Huh. So I think that the summary you gave is actually perfect, but it does really, it's just visually stunning. The performances are great, and it's actually, even though it's definitely touching on horrors and class divide, it's also very sharp and smart and funny. And so I think that it'll appeal to a lot of audiences in terms of not just the sort of universal themes of class, but also just how funny and smart and unpredictable it is, especially in the third act.
There's one word that showed up in a review, the word unsettling.
Yes, very unsettling, very disturbing. But I love those types of films, and I think it's actually perfect, especially for the Halloween this month. I think it's actually like perfect for that sort of audience.
Is there something about it that really feels right in our current cultural moment, this idea of talking about class aspiration and greed?
For sure. I think that we're talking so much about it, not just here in the States, but across, you know, the entire world. And we have this huge wealth inequality that is spread everywhere. And so I think that's part of what makes this film very, very universal. And it's something that Bong Joon-ho has come back to and talked about very often in his film. So it's a familiar theme for him. And I think here he's definitely really, really honing into that sort of upstairs, downstairs dynamic and what it means to live on either side of these, on either side of the class spectrum, and how it's not all roses, no matter which side you're on.
My guest is Ayesha Harris, New York Times culture editor. We're talking about some of the new films that are going to be in theaters that you might want to or might not want to check out. Gemini Man is Ang Lee's new film starring Will Smith, and this is a very tech-filled film. They use this digital de-aging technology to make Will Smith look 23. He's currently 50 years old. Did The Flash do anything for you? Did the technology make you like this movie anymore?
Oh, man. So it didn't do very well at the box office this weekend. It just opened. It actually went below predictions, I believe. And so I can understand why. The combination of talent here is really, really enticing. You have Will Smith, you have Ang Lee, you also have Clive Owen. And together you would think that this could be like a really exciting, interesting movie. It's Will Smith sort of returning to his action hero status after a few years of not really doing so much of those types of roles. But it really does fall flat, and the fact that it's framed at 120 frames per second, in which it looks very much like a video game, it just is kind of jarring. It doesn't feel completely real. I will say the de-aging technique actually looks pretty convincing. I think it helps that we have all grown up with Will Smith and we know what he's looked like at that age. So that was kind of cool. But overall, it felt like a movie that could have been much funnier or could have been much more intense. And it just kind of held in the middle there with this very distracting cinematic technique that Ang Lee was trying to go for.
I mean, Ang Lee is so interesting. Life of Pi, Brokeback Mountain, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, The Ice Storm. Do we get any of the nuance that he is capable of in this film?
Not really. I mean, it all just feels... I guess I just wanted more of like a campy feel to it. If we were going to go in this route, I wanted something more like Face Off, or and instead we get this sort of just kind of inert movie that doesn't really go anywhere, and it just falls flat for me. And so I can understand why audiences aren't necessarily clamoring for it at this moment.
All right. Well, someone else who's faring a little bit better in their sort of comeback, their reemergence, is Eddie Murphy in the film Dolomite Is My Name. It's released by Netflix. I mean, you kind of forget that Eddie Murphy is an Academy Award nominee. You know, he's been out of the spotlight for so long. What's this film about?
Right. So Eddie Murphy is playing a man named Rudy Ray Moore. It's based in part on a true story. And Rudy Ray Moore was sort of a failed singer and comedian who finally found a little bit of success. His character in the movie finds success by adopting the style and humor of the stories of a homeless man who he meets on the street. And so Eddie Murphy, once he gets a little bit of success, his character decides that he's going to make his own film and become his own, like, make everything from scratch. Like, he knows nothing about making movies, but that's what he's going to do. And so the movie actually feels a little bit like The Artist, that movie from a couple of years ago that was about the making of The Room that starred James Franco. And here, Eddie Murphy's playing a similar character, although not nearly as, should we say, he's not nearly as dumb or weird as the character in The Artist.
But bonkers. Tell it bonkers.
Bonkers. That's a good point. He's not as bonkers as that character, but he is sort of he's a character who will do whatever it takes and is self-aware, but also just like clearly has no idea what he's doing. It has a really great cast too. You have Keegan-Michael Key, Mike Epps, Craig Robinson, Wesley Snipes. It's just a really fun movie, and it does feel like a comeback, like one of many of Eddie Murphy's comebacks. I feel like every few years he's having a comeback, but it really is the perfect role for him, and I encourage everyone to seek it out.
Let's check out a clip. This is of Rudy Ray Moore, Eddie Murphy, talking to a singer, Lady Reed, at a bar about how he creates his characters. Let's take a listen.
You've been up on stage, Lady Reed.
I used to be a backup singer in New Orleans.
I knew it. I told you.
Sure do.
The singer, huh?
I get so nervous I had to hang on to the mic from not falling over. Butterflies all in my stomach.
You're funny. You should be doing stand-up.
But what would I do?
I'm not really no pimp. I ain't got no stable of hoes. I just created a character. I do it all the time. I've been Prince Dumas. I've been the Harlem Hillbilly. And tonight, look at this here.
Just tug on. Tug on this.
Mm-hmm. Just to give a little tug. Just a little. Don't tug too hard. Don't take off.
Oh, that's a
Yeah, that's right. It's all pretend. You put on a cape and turn into a superhero. Leave the real you behind, go on stage.
Magic, huh?
Yeah, it took us a while to get all those bleeps out there. What period is this in, Aisha?
Oh, this is set in the early 70s. So I should note that the costumes in this are also amazing. Ruth E. Carter, who finally won an Academy Award this past year for designing the costumes for Black Panther and was a longtime collaborator with Spike Lee, also designed the costumes here. So they're fantastic. And it does take place against the backdrop of the Blaxploitation era and also the comedy album era, when you had folks like Red Fox and Richard Pryor making comedy albums that people loved. So there's a lot of rich history that's going on. And it's just like a really delightful, fun and thought-provoking film.
My guest is Aisha Harris, New York Times culture editor. We're talking about some of the films you might want to catch this fall. This is the one, Jojo Rabbit, I always get a little nervous about talking about because I haven't seen it. It's directed by Taika Waititi, who directed Thor, who he also stars in it. And he's very funny. He's very witty. But he has made what they're calling an anti-hate satire about World War II. The Guardian described this film, Jojo Rabbit, as a, quote, smug Hitler comedy. What's the premise? Let's just start with the premise.
Yeah, so the premise, Taika Waititi, the director, plays Hitler, and he pops up from time to time in the mind of, as sort of like an imaginary friend of a little boy, like a 10-year-old boy named Jojo. And Jojo is obsessed with Nazism and does not like Jewish people. And he's slowly, that slowly changes once he becomes friends with a Jewish girl who is hiding out in his mom's house. And so his mom is played by Scarlett Johansson. Sam Rockwell is also in the film. And, you know, I think this movie has definitely, it's sparked up that conversation that we have every so often, because we do often have Nazi satire films about, are Nazis funny? Can you make fun of this? I think the argument is yes, you can, but there's a very high bar for how you do it. I wanted to like this movie more than I did. It wasn't quite as biting as I hoped it would be. And at the end of the day, it really felt like beneath all the satire, it was really just a film that was another kind of retread of a person who is hateful and doesn't like a certain group of people, whether they're Black, Jewish, whatever, learns how to become more tolerant through one person that they befriend or fall in love with. And so it just felt kind of, we've seen this all before, could have been funnier. But, you know, I've heard mixed things about it. There are some people who love this and then some people who I think fall more on my side of things. But I definitely think it's worth checking out. I just don't know if it all works.
I'm really interested in your thoughts on sort of the business aspect of the new Martin Scorsese film, The Irishman. He said that he couldn't get Hollywood studios to back a 3.5-hour mob movie. And even though it had De Niro, Pacino, Pesci, Ray Romano, so he went to Netflix to make this film. What do you think is the significance of this Netflix versus Hollywood studio release?
Oh, man. I mean, this is something we're going to be talking about for years now, and we've been talking about for years. I do think that is a common thing that we're hearing from these old-time classic or like new Hollywood directors and even those who have been really successful. You know, Spike Lee has even had he's always had trouble funding his films, but Spike Lee had to turn to Kickstarter for one of his films and then turn to Netflix to remake some stuff. I think that it really speaks to the fact that these streaming platforms, and especially Netflix, are there where the money is at. They are where the long established directors and TV showrunners are being able to like be more creative and find the money that they aren't able to get from studios who are much more cautious and perhaps have much more to lose. So I think that it's an interesting dichotomy, because at the same time that Scorsese is talking about this frustration and inability to get things made except outside of Netflix, there's also a conversation happening because he's sort of put down the superhero Marvel era that we're living in, and people are trying to call him cantankerous and like an old man who can't get with the changing times. But I think that, you know, first of all, he's Scorsese and he gets a little bit of a pass there because he's been around for a long time. And I think it's not just him being cantankerous. I think it's him sort of expressing a fatigue that a lot of people feel about the Marvelization of this, of our Hollywood. Everything is Marvel now, or Marvel adjacent. So I think he's at a very interesting point in his career, but he seems to be, I haven't seen The Irishman yet, but I do think that, I know that the reviews have been glowing, mm-hmm. and it seems like a return to form for him. So it's exciting.
And it's kind of cool. It's going to play at a Broadway theater for a month. That kind of be a cool way to see it, you know? Mm-hmm. Aisha Harris, New York Times culture editor. As always, Aisha, thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart, and I'll meet you at the top of the hour.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.